Morning. As you can tell from my accent, I'm not really from around here. But equally, I don't have the accent of the Scottish Public Health Network, which is where I make my living. Myself and my co-presenter, Jay Glasser, don't have any formal disclosures to make at this time, but we have got two admissions. The first admission is to say that we are presenting a paper on behalf of our colleague, a very dear colleague, Alex Gatherer from the UK, who unfortunately can't be here at APHA, possibly for the first time in living memory, certainly my living memory, and we wish him well in his current healthcare problems. The second thing to say is that Alex had originally identified what we're talking about as a 90-minute session in its own right, exploring the relationship between US and UK approaches to primary care and public health integration. Between ourselves in the next 20 minutes, myself and Jay are going to try and put some kind of context around the three presentations that you've been hearing today, and perhaps pose a slightly more challenging question at the end than the one perhaps we might have taken away otherwise. You can tell from our title that this is really about a pitch to the APHA of saying this is what we're trying to do here over 90 minutes. The bit you are going to get is the US-UK experience and what might be important in that common agenda. The first upstream statement that I want to make is we are in a time of systems transition. Doesn't actually matter which side of the pond you're on. UK systems are changing, American systems are changing. And there is a climate of ambiguity which goes with that, which is actually buffeting everything that we're trying to do. There are a series of factors, extrinsic and intrinsic factors, which aren't necessarily helping very much. Just what is the role of prevention in a time of austerity? We can talk about brokerage and leverage. We can use big public health words about getting more money into bits that matter to us. We can talk about major health reform and legislation, but they're structural change. They're not necessarily practical change on the ground as such. We can talk about challenges in delivery which are associated by budget constraints. But when it's the same pot of money, it's about redistribution, not about constraints as such. What about demography? Demographies are changing. The UK has seen an expansion in older persons' population, which is putting the largest stress on our acute care system in the existence of the UK National Health Services. In Edinburgh today, more than 60% of every hospital acute outpatient appointment will be somebody over the age of 65. But geriatric medicine isn't leading the charge, nor is our chronic disease management systems. What about technical complexity? We are actually looking more and more at remote sensing, but they come at a cost. If you're on a telehealth or a telecare system currently on certain parts of Virginia, Pennsylvania, DC, how's that doing for you when you're one of the 60 million that's lost power? Or you're in the UK when you're sitting on the island of Orkney or Shetland and actually your power is as much prone to failure due to the fact you only have local generation capacity. And we have expectation change. Our professional expectations are changing, our policy and commercial expectations are changing, and the public certainly wants a very different kind of healthcare. And they want a different type of preventative care. And the degree to which they want to commit their own resources to the business of health is changing very dramatically. Now, we are in both countries hearing the call for integration. And it is reflecting an attempt to go back to some principles of what an enlightened society wants to do about the nature of healthcare and public health systems. Scotland's enlightenment is underpinning the political systems in the UK as well as the Americas, and that is about actually trying to look at how you improve the population's commonwealth. But we're reforming it all the time. We're actually being asked to look again at what we've already done in the past and debating how to make real change. We're looking at saying, it's about agenda. Let's just make sure we're all saying the same thing. How many times have you heard people saying, let's make sure we're going to sing from the same hymn sheet? Or let's stop reinventing the wheel? Or let's get upstream? I've been in the business 25 years, and I'm on my third sets of wheels reinvention around preventative practice. And all of these get reflected in changes in legislation, in payment systems, and we keep coming back to healthcare reform. That somehow we just haven't quite got it right yet and we need to reform again. And sometimes we're reforming before we even get the last set of reforms properly bedded in, or the evaluations haven't happened yet. But, change is good. Change gives opportunity. Change has that potential of perhaps getting it right this time. So how do we seize the opportunities that are being presented in both the UK and the US to look at health reform and to take the challenges and affect genuine change for genuine people? Now, I'm going to introduce Joe Glasser now to talk a little bit about his reflections on what those US changes might actually mean in practice. Not the rhetoric, what they might mean in practice. I'll do the same for the UK. Then we're going to present you with some common challenges and pose you some questions. Joe?
Thank you. Phil and I are filling in, as Phil said, for Alex Gatherer, and I'd like to pay a personal tribute to Alex. Alex has been a mover in jail health reform over the years in social justice, so I'm sorry he can't be here, and he's been an influence for me, certainly. My brief comments to stay on, I'll say schedule, since we have that the Dickens tale of two cities, the best of times, the worst of times, always fits. And it fits especially today. And so, you know, we look at, if I go back and just try to stay within our slides as a framework and go through this, you know, here we have the Affordable Care Act, and that's been discussed by several of our speakers, and we all know this. But we also have to realize there's been landmark regulation changes, smoking falling under now the aegis of FDA, the Food Safety, the Agricultural Act, CMS experiments in performance changes, which have also been alluded to. Now, whether it's $2.3 trillion or $2.6 trillion, we shouldn't get hung up. Remember Dirksen's famous quotes, well, you know what they say about the U.S. budget, $1 billion here and $1 billion there, and pretty soon it adds up to real money. So I'll just say, but I want to talk about some of the studies that RWJ, which is they're about to release the third of their trilogies. I think it's been postponed. It will come out shortly. And it's really good reading, certainly good reading for all of us, on why public health lags. And that's really what everyone has implicitly been or explicitly been discussing. So if we begin to look at some of the big problems, what are they? Well, we all know that public health is a kind of disconnected experience. When surveys are done, people approve of the idea of environmental health, of intervention, immunizations, but then when you ask about public health, they're not sure what it is. So we've got a big messaging problem, and I'm leading up to the notion of this whole, not only our talk, this session, how do we communicate and how do we work together more effectively? And so there's a whole problem when we look at some of these extrinsic factors. You know, we can think Sandy, how this will suddenly focus on preparedness, as it should, and will capture this in these kind of teachable moments. But on the other hand, we have to worry from Sandy to Nanny, the view of public health often as being part of a nanny state. So there's a definite conflict in the public's mind. And I always say, why can't we be more like France? And so there is a big one to learn from each other. You know, France has the lowest rates of preventable mortality of any of the OECD states. And we all know U.S. is way down on the list. I need not tell you that, since you wrestle with the effects of way down on the list phenomena every day. So the whole thing is that talking about systems in transition, what is it that we can do? Well, one of them is take advantage of the fact of the uncertainty of the times. And there's certainly enough uncertainty abounding around us, our meeting this year and the upcoming elections. But part of it is that when we think about systems in transition, that there's been a recognition now that organizations can't do it all. And the constraints, as Phil had mentioned on budget, as Robert Kennedy say, paraphrasing him briefly, where others see dangers, I see opportunities. And we have both dangers and opportunities. And how to work within the constraints itself. So this whole notion of looking at some of the factors in the USA, just think of what is reflected in the records of work on the electronic medical record, pay and performance being linked together, standards and accountability, and expanding basically the framework for prevention. So the question is how to seize on it. Listening to people who are much more au courant with these situations, I'm saying large organizations who have been meeting, they're fairly confident the ACA is going to survive no matter what the outcome. Of course, the question is what will survive? And how will it, and what survive be implemented? But it's having done some work with the Health Benefits Exchange in the District of Columbia, you can see that despite all the very important reservations, some of again, and some proper, some more emotional, that there is a basis that there needs to be change. It's changes is happening, and some of the changes. And many of the changes were reflected in our talk today. So staying on time, I wanted to just skip now past factors in the U.S. And Phil, I'll give some of my closing comments and let you come back up. And well, let me talk about what the IOM is recommending. You know, what can we do to be active about this? The first is they're saying we need to set big goals. And what they had in mind is how did NIH double its budget? It's about $12 billion the accounting is loose. That's one of the problems. There's no chart of accounts for this. They're spent for public health annually, and how to double this they reckon that $24 billion would be adequate. So to make important changes. And what they propose is setting big goals in terms of 2030, that we should have the time to get all of us together to get performance measures that we can finally meet. The second point is the recognizing immediate and intergenerational problems and making commitments to these as part of our goals. So I would like to just conclude that there are tensions in the system. Some have proposed that all of this could be funded out of $70 billion in the, quote, waste in the system. And others said it is a bad principle to talk about us, and I'll quote the way it was said, getting the crumbs from the medical care system. And there's also the challenge of how to balance the sort of general funds against the notion of silos. Those are among them. I want to conclude with two things. One, remind us of what Bill Foege said, that we have within us our social DNA, as he calls it, that keeps us all committed to this. But also to recognize so do other out there. We all do, humans. And how to appeal to this as both something that is of value within our social DNA and also the why it is practical. My last comment was I want to say something about Jack Geiger, and not just to add to it. The other day, I'm chairing a 10-year activity on the history of public health, starting with APHA, and I would like, if anyone's interested, please let me know. We'd like to start getting all engaged. Someone gave me a copy of Jack Geiger, an interview with Jack Geiger, that said it was not in a format that they could open any longer. So I just wanted to say that I accept it gratefully. We'll find out how to open it, but how to preserve these kinds of things. Last thing I'll say, I chaired a session for Lester Breslau, a past president of APHA, who was so influential here. So afterwards, if you're interested in the history of our, even remotely, just give me your card, give me your name, we'll put you on the list and we can check up. And I thank you and turn it back to Phil.
I'm actually out of time and people are already leaving. I could take a vote to see how many want to hear about what I've got to say, but that would undermine our moderator. I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to ask you to put yourself in a position of America 50 years from now. Because what you've got is you've got the opportunity over the next 50 years of doing what the UK NHS has done for the last 60. Because the national insurance system that you're putting in place has the potential of being not dissimilar from the way in which the UK NHS is run. Every single presentation I've heard this morning has exact congruences with what we've been doing in relation to integrating disease prevention, primary care integration for the purposes of both clinical prevention as well as lifestyle enhancement prevention, even to the extent of environmental referral for a much longer period of time. Let me show you where we're at this time. If I can get this to go back up. There we go. In 50 years, if you are not thoughtful, you'll be probably in a new period of austerity. 50-year cycles are not unheard of. And efficiency and quality will still be the major concern. Waiting lists are a way of managing throughput of activity in a limited resource environment. If you have limited resource, you're going to end up, if you are not thoughtful, doing the same thing. Preventative service development as an invest to save. I've had 60 years of investment behind me. National screening programs, yep, we've got them. cancer mortality and cancer survival is still not something we're very proud of, even though we've had long-term problems and addressed them on the long term. People, once they're clear about the system and the system is fine, tend to go for structural reorganization. Now, some of you may be surprised. We actually have 4 national health services in the UK now. Not 1, 4. England has one, Wales has one, Scotland has one, Northern Ireland has one. Because we have devolved healthcare responsibilities to the national governments, and those national governments are taking them in different ways. So in England, public health is being taken out of the healthcare system and put into civic governance. To be able to reconnect and integrate with the types of approaches around housing, transport, environment and built environment support. In Scotland, where I'm from, we are being pushed for public health to become an essential component of integrated social care, similar to many of the ways in which local public health and community health services in the States are operating. But that separates us off from the acute sector. And it doesn't allow us direct line of sight towards civic governance. In Wales and Northern Ireland, they've actually gone further and they've created public health agencies, wholly independent of the healthcare delivery system or local government systems. So structural change suddenly becomes the game in town if you're not thoughtful, because central money is driving and central money looks for structural efficiencies rather than healthcare quality efficiencies. These common challenges in white are the sorts of things that we both face. The blue comments are the sorts of voices you're going to start hearing about how difficult it is to move things forward. And of all of them, the working smarter with less money, without losing quality or effectiveness or creating staff burnout, is perhaps the most important query that's being faced, because there just isn't the cash anymore. I said it's about redistribution. Yes, it is. But redistribution creates problems. Jay's already said ACA ain't going to go away, nor should it. So, 50 years from now, do you really want to be in the position the UK is now? No, the UK doesn't want to be in the position the UK is now. Within public health, within the UK, we're actually starting to ask some harder questions. We're asking questions not so much how do we change, but how do we preserve? Because we're not in an age of complexity and cross currents anymore. We might actually be in a change of age, that the economic structures that underpin health care delivery, public health delivery, are no longer going to be fit for purpose within the next 50 years. That things are very, very different, that the way this feels is very, very different. That the whole question about whether or not we're looking at health, lifestyle prevention, or genomic prevention is the way forward. We are in a very, very different world. This feels different to us in the UK. We are beginning to say, how do you redesign a system for a different economic model, for a different way of looking at service delivery, and ensuring that the challenges we currently face help us to move not to next year, but a 10, 25 generational time horizon when public health will actually be a very, very different beast. I hope the thoughtfulness that we all need, that we've all been inspired by the many mentors who we hear congratulated and discussed at meetings like this, actually force us to not just say either in the white or the blue, but what do we do to make it different? Thank you.